This is an interview with W.C. Rogers. He was born in 1920 on a small farm in East Texas, between what is now Palestine and Nacogdoches, Texas. This is a brief history of his life from 1920 to 1942. He is now a resident of Alice, Texas. He has 3 children and is still married to the same woman he married in 1931. Okay, well, if you'd like to right now, you can go ahead and discuss some of your schooling that you had.
Well, I started school in 1920, and we had to walk about 3.5 miles every morning. And went about, I guess, maybe 6 months in a year. And back then, didn't learn too much. But we always had to, before we started school, we had to gather the crop and everything. And the little ones worked just like the big ones. And
all right, back in this time, you know, like you said, you walked to school and everything. What kind of roads or transportation system did they have?
Well, I think it was, the roads was pretty bad. They were dirt roads. And when school would be out, if it was raining, my father or some of the neighbors would come up with a covered wagon and carry all the neighbor kids home, keep them from getting wet. And that wasn't too often, though. It was pretty rough.
All right. Were there very many automobiles at the time?
There was very few automobiles. There was only, I don't imagine there's 2 in the community. The doctor owned an automobile and maybe one of the merchants.
Okay. Do you ever remember your first ride in an automobile?
Yeah, I remember the first ride in an automobile. The doctor, he made house calls and he came to our house. I don't remember who he came to see, but anyway, when he started to go back to town, he got us kids in there and let us ride about 2 miles down the road and let us out, and we walked back to the house. That was my first automobile ride. And the roads was real narrow, and the post was so closed in, I reckon it seemed like the post was just a... looked like the post was moving.
Yeah. What were the road surfaces there, or just made out of what?
Well, they were just the native, whatever it was. If it's red clay, it was red clay, and if it was sand, it was sand.
Okay, after you finished with your education, what did you do after you finished your education? Did you start work, or what?
Well, when the Depression hit, I quit school and went to help my father. He didn't have any money to hire any help, and we had cattle and had a farm, pretty good sized farm. And it looked like it was going to have to be a family project from then on. And I had plenty of work. You know, you had work, you never got through. You had to, you had to grow corn for those mules to eat, and then you had to cut wood, and you never did get through.
How many people did you have in your family to help you with this labor?
Well, there was 8 kids, my mother and father. and everybody had a job.
Okay, could you describe your routine starting in the morning and ending in the evening, what you did during the day?
Well, you get up in the morning and eat bacon and eggs and country biscuits, ribbon cane syrup, coffee. And quick as it got light enough then, while you went to doing the chores, you had milk. Well, the first thing you did when you got up, you fed the horses, mules, what you were going to work that day, you know. And then by the time you got your lunch, well, they was through with theirs. And usually the girls done the milking and all, and the boys, they went on. It takes about 14 hours a day, you know, to put in a day on the farm. And you got out early, and we probably taken off an hour at noon. And the way my mother had a horn, you know, like these fox hunters had.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's the way she let us know that it was time to come in at noon. She'd get out there on the porch and blow that horn. And I remember I used to have a little old mule, yeah, and plow that mule. And when he'd hear that dinner horn blow, well, he brayed. And I guarantee he was the man in East Texas could make him make another round after he got back to the right end to quit.
What time in the evening did you quit? Did you go ahead and...
Oh, just in time to get in wood and do the chores over again by dark.
Okay, what were some of the crops that you grew during this time?
Well, we had to grow corn for, you know, that was mule feed, gasoline back then. And we grow cotton and tomatoes was the money crop. Of course, we grow ribbon cane and sweet potatoes, you know, to eat ourselves. And that corn we fattened out the hogs too. You know, that was back before refrigeration, you know, when you... The only meat that you had to be either cured or, say, on weekends they had somebody kill a beef and bring it around and peddle it out, you know, or you might borrow a kind of a club, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And one guy'd kill one Saturday, and then another neighbor he'd kill maybe the next Saturday. And that's only fresh meat you had, you know, and you had to eat it up there to spoil.
Okay. You mentioned your problem with refrigeration, so your milk had to be used quickly and so forth.
Oh, we had a trough by the well made out of 1x12s, and we had a hole bored in the bottom of it with a corn cob in it. And my mother kept that milk and butter in that trough. And every 2 hours or so, well, she'd go out there and change the water, you know, draw fresh water out of the well.
Mm-hmm.
It done pretty good that way.
Kept it nice and cool, huh?
Yeah, kept it nice and cool.
Okay. Okay, at what age did you decide to leave your father's farm and go out on your own?
Well, I was 18 years old, and I decided to marry a neighbor girl. And I, getting ready for the wedding, I remember very well I was going in to buy me a wedding suit. And I dressed up and started out of the house, and my mother asked me where I was going. And I told her I was going to town to buy a suit to get married in, and she said, "Well, wait," said, "I want to buy it for you." And she gave me a $20 bill. So we kept the car down at the barn, had a big tin barn with a tube shed on the side of it. So I backed the car out, and my father, he is in the barn, and he come out there and I said, "Hey, where are you going?" I said, "Well, I'm going to buy me a wedding suit." And he said, "Well, wait," said, "I want to buy it for you." So he gave me a $20 bill. So I went into town, I bought a suit, two pair of pants, coat and vest for $16.50. You want to show me?
All right, after you bought your wedding suit, how much longer was it than before you got married?
Oh, a week. We got married October the 28th, 1931. And really, we didn't know what anybody was supposed to take a honeymoon. That was time to make up the ribbon cane syrup, and me and my wife, we spent 2 weeks making up ribbon cane syrup, and then when we got the syrup made up, we went into town, got us some furniture, and moved out to ourselves. And of course, we didn't have much to buy with. We bought some of the furniture at the secondhand store, and we bought a new stove. And oh, we didn't know anybody when we started out. When we got through, we had it all paid for. We didn't have much money to start with.
Okay, well, at what point did you get your own farm and start building your own house?
Well, in 1932, my father-in-law and mother-in-law gave us 32 acres of land, and it was all timber. There was no open land on it, and we built us a house on it. My mother-in-law helped us with the cash part, and the foundation for the house, there was a tie hacker, and he cut timber down and hewed the sills and sleepers out, and a lot of lumber. We just traded it. I traded potatoes and ribbon cane syrup and cornmeal. People work for those little sawmills up in East Texas. It's pretty hard up. Sawmill couldn't pay them any money, but they would let them have lumber if they could trade it for groceries, and that's the way we got the house built. But back at that time, I remember that 1x12 plain lumber was $12.50.
Okay, how long did it take you to build your house? Did you have people come in and help you?
Well, me and my father-in-law, we built the house, but you know, when you got to have a barn, and so I peeled them logs, cut logs and peeled them and notched them and had them there, and then the neighbors came in, and that's kind of a little deal up in East Texas. They called it log raising, and women would fix dinner, and the men would, we put all the logs up, and for the roof, I went down in the woods and I cut an oak tree and I made boards. I think that barn, the best I remember, the floor, it was an old wildcat wooden derrick that I got scrap lumber and put the floor in that. It's about, I don't know, 3x8 or 10, something like that, the lumber was. But I remember very well that all the money I was out on that barn was the nails, and best I remember, there's 38 cents to put that roof on for the nails. In the garden fence, I made the pickets with, you had a little old tool you called a fro, And I rolled them pickets out, and we built a picket guard fence. We built a picket yard fence. The chicken house was homemade boards, the roof, and walls was pickets. And everything there was, I did it with my own hands.
Okay. Did you devote all your time to farming for your living, or did you also work some on the side to bring in some extra money?
Well, I wasn't farming too much, you know. But about that time, you know, they cut the acreage on cotton and everything. And I had worked for cut timber for, well, it was two or three different companies I worked for. You could, when you cut that timber, they paid you, it's contract, so much a thousand. They didn't pay you by the day. But anyway, you could make about a dollar and a half a day. But at that time, if you worked on the farm, they paid you 75 cents a day. You know, and it was, you didn't work with a watch either. And I don't know, I know a lot of days we cut a 150 logs, but you'd have to cut down 100 trees to get 150 logs. And it's about a dollar and a half, or dollar and a half a day, maybe a dollar and a quarter, something like that. That's
okay. Y'all grew most of your own food that you used in the house and everything.
Oh yeah, we never did worry about it. My wife can take a scoggy hoe and make more groceries than anybody. She got a green thumb.
Did you have to buy very much stuff from your store?
Oh, we didn't buy any too much stuff. You know, just coffee and sugar and, you know, like vinegar and stuff to can with. She can 400 or 500 cans a year, you know, vegetables and fruit. You can get peaches for 25 cents a bushel if you pick them.
Okay. Did you have any electricity at this time for, you know, lighting and so forth?
No. We used a coal oil lamp. You take a gallon can to the store and get a gallon of oil, and they'd stick a arse potato or onion on it. Well, they couldn't afford to do that now, you know, the highs.
Yeah. Okay, and then that was your main fuel. They use that for lighting and heating and everything.
Oh, yeah, we didn't even have a radio back then.
Okay. After you stopped farming and everything, what job did you move on to then?
Oh, I went in the oil field, and first job I ever had was a independent, and it was a wooden derrick, and they had one boiler, and we wasn't going about 1,800 foot, and it was that old one boiler deal. They didn't have a boiler feed pump. They had a injector, water injector on it. And sometimes the foreman would get excited. He couldn't get any water in the boiler, and he'd run up on the derrick floor and say, "You better get it off the bottom," said, "the boiler's fixing to blow up."
Were you ever around any accidents around on the oil field, you know, or something like that would happen?
Oh, I've never been around where this boiler blowed up. I've been around some accidents in Old Goose Creek field down there, where we pulled a standard derrick in and killed a tube pusher. Yeah. And while we was burying the tube pusher, the old well tried to blow out, and the derrick was laying down, and the Kelly bent over the draw works. So we had to run down there and put a valve on the, take the hose off and put a valve on the Kelly to keep it, you know, so we could close it off.
Where was the location, you know, where did you do most of your work?
Oh, I roughnecked around Houston, Pierce Junction, Blue Ridge, Thompson, Goose Creek, down around Winion, Beaumont, along the Gulf Coast. Worked out of Houston up there on my roughnecking part.
And you continued to work for the oil field during World War II, right?
Oh yeah, I worked for the oil drilling contractors. Was what I was really working for then. But I did work in the shipyard some, and I worked in the shipyard at night, and then I would go out and help pull tubing and sucker rods in the daytime, and didn't get much sleep all during the war.
Do you remember the times of the war, if they, you know, rationed gasoline and so forth like that, and how they went about this?
Well, yeah, it was rationed back in World War II, and they gave you a book with coupons in it, and you had a book and a B and a C, the best I remember, and I believe the A was 3 gallons for each stamp, and the B was for 5 gallons, and I never did have a C. I don't know. It was for commercial, I guess. Okay.
What was the hardest thing to get during the war?
Well, we done pretty good, everything but shoes. And we always need the pair of shoes. Never did have a stamp to get them with.
Well, did they ration any kind of foods that they would need for the war?
Well, I don't remember. It seemed to me like there was sugar and maybe coffee, and the meat wasn't rationed, I know, that I remember.
Okay. Yeah, we've covered up to World War II, jobs that you had and everything. Up until this time, can you remember any lawbreakers or bandits that were around that you heard about or read about in the newspaper?
Well, I remember Bonnie and Clyde. They was about the biggest news in East Texas for a while. And other than that, there'd be somebody get killed every once in a while, but, I didn't know the details of it. But I guess the biggest law breaking was at that time was moonshine. That had your kin folks or your friends. It was getting a law to do it, but they did it. They had to, I guess, for the money that was in it, and to make their and have something to drink too.
Do you ever remember the first time or the first couple times that you ever tried moonshine whiskey, or did you ever drink any?
Oh, I remember the first time that I remember trying it. I've tried it several times, but the first time, my uncle was, he killed a beef, and we went over to get a quarter, and he also made moonshine whiskey, and so we got a quart fruit jar full of whiskey, and my daddy and neighbor, they got that quarter beef, and they put a pole, tied it on the pole and carried it on the shoulders, and they get a place they could while they'd let down and hit that fruit jar, and they'd let me hit it too. And we got home, and my mother was frying some of that steak for supper, and we had a wash pan and towel and everything out on the front porch. So she said to get ready for supper, and so I washed my face and I got the towel, and I decided that I'd just sit down to dry my face. Boy, I was pretty well polluted up. And when I sat down, then I never could get up. And I know my mother, she really hit the seat.
So most of the people didn't really approve of the drinking that much. They just sold it for money then, huh?
Well, I don't know. It's really just to try to make a living for your family.
Okay, what was, during this time, pre-World War II, what were most of the people, what religion did they go to, and what religion are you?
Well, where I was raised, there wasn't nothing but Protestants there. You know, there wasn't, I didn't know, I think there were one Catholic in the town, and I don't know for sure that he was, but he was the undertaker. But they wasn't at, I guess it's 19, well, after I left East Texas, before I ever met a Catholic to really know it, you know.
Okay, do you ever remember going to church or remember any of your preachers around at the time?
Oh, yeah, we used to go to church, man, yeah. I remember we used to go to church and in the wagon when I was a kid. And the preacher, he had preached something way past noontime, and man, a kid just nearly starved to death before you get home. And you know, you didn't care too much. The kid didn't like preachers too much when he preached for about 12:30. But everybody went to church back then.
Okay. Did in this town or out on the farm, did y'all have a doctor that was close by? And if you did, do you ever remember him coming out to deliver babies or whatever?
Yeah, it was, I guess, about, I don't know, probably 5 miles out, and he made the house call, and the babies were born at home. I remember my first baby, he came out and made a house call and delivered the baby and charged me $25. And then when the next one was born, it's about 3.5 years later. Time was getting a little better then. That is 1936. And he charged me $35 that time. And I don't know, it was just, I remember when the office call to the doctor used to be $1. You know, go and make an office call.
Okay. Did he have pretty regular hours, or did he have a lot of territory to cover?
Well, he had a, sometime he went day and night when, you know, it was necessary. But it seemed like there were plenty of doctors in. In every little old town in East Texas, there was a doctor at that time. And, I don't know. I don't guess they got rich, but they was, you know, they was really accepted in the community and respected, you know.
Okay. Do you remember of any festivals or celebrations that you might have, you know, like a big get-together, everybody would bring food and everything like that?
Oh, yeah. They used to have them big dinners pretty well everything. They used to even have cemetery work and everybody go and stay all day and have a big dinner. And then they had singing conventions and homecomings and 4th of July. Everybody carried just boxes of food.
Do you remember of any particular instance that you really had a good time at one, or one that really stands out in your memory?
Oh, I don't know. I went to so many then. We used to have a family reunion before World War II, and I know we met down on the river. And I guess that would, if there was anything outstanding, would be those reunions. You know, you got to see all your kin folks, and people that you hadn't seen in a year, or maybe had never seen. And anyway, during World War II, we quit having it whenever they started back.
During this time, do you remember any sicknesses that, you know, just everybody had besides just the common cold?
Well, the first I remember was back when I was going to school, where they claimed that the soldiers brought it back from World War I, and they called it the 7-year itch. And it was, if best I remember, would get in between your fingers or else where your clothes would rub or something like that. And it itched pretty bad. And some people went to the doctor and some people just had home remedies. And the doctor gave them some kind of salve to rub on there. And there was some people used grease and sulfur and I don't know, some, I think, boiled poke root and taking a bath in the poke root, but the fact is, I don't know, whatever cured it, it just went away.
Okay. Did you have any other infections, like, say, ringworm, warts, or anything like that?
Oh, yeah, we had ringworms, and the way we doctored them, we'd get the juice out of a fig leaf and rub it on there, or get a black walnut, a green-black walnut, and bust the hull and rub the juice out of that walnut on there. That's where we got rid of the ringworms.
Okay, do you have, remember, any remedies for removing warts or any blemishes of the skin and so forth?
Oh, yeah, I remember having some warts one time, and there was an old man with a real old man, or I thought he was old at that time. Anyway, he had a handlebar mustache, and he take my warts and his taking this pocket knife, and he made a cross on those warts, and he mumbled something or another. Anyway, the first thing I knew, the warts was gone.
They just disappeared. Huh?
They just disappeared. I have heard of them tying a horse hair good and tight around those warts, but I never did try that. I don't know.
Can you remember any other types of medicines or home remedies that they had during this time for, you know, just any little disease or anything?
Oh, yeah, for a cough, we used to take honey, and I believe they put alum in it. And then there was some kind of weed grew up there in East Texas that they called it. We called it mullein. I don't know if that's a real name or not. And then they'd boil that mullein and make a tea out of it. But I don't know what they're taking it for. But I remember having and also peach tree leaf tea. But then there was a vine up there. They take that vine and cure it out and save it, and if you had some kind of a summer complaint and going to the bathroom pretty fast, every time you went to the bathroom, you'd take and drank a little bit of that tea that was made out of that vine, and in a day or about a day, you was okay. It really worked.
Okay. And then, do you remember what the major cause of death were, you know, a lot of people dying and so forth, you know, from illing, you know, like heart attack or something, or did they have heart attacks back then?
Well,
they called them?
They was, most of the people that I know of they had pneumonia, or there was a lot of people died back then that they called acute indigestion, but I think probably what it was a heart attack. It seemed like they just died, like they die now with a heart attack, just all of a sudden.
Okay. Did very many people go to the hospitals and have operations for, like, appendicitis and so forth?
Oh, not too many. But the people up there, they didn't like the hospitals too well. A lot of people died at home. It should have went to the hospital, but they just was kind of afraid or something. They were just didn't too many go. Not in my family.
Okay. Did they have operations at this time?
Oh, yeah, they had operations. They had appendix operations. I don't know. They had to stay in the bed a long time back then. I think they did. Probably the reason they had bad luck with them was they didn't get an exercise enough.
Okay.
you know, quick enough. They just lay there in a bed probably for 2 weeks, not even move. And when he should have been up, stirring around.
Did you ever have to go to the hospital for any kind of an operation?
A long time ago. In 1942, I went to hospital and had appendix operation. It wasn't too bad. Of course, I was unconscious when they got me there. I had a ruptured appendix and gangrene had already set up, and I was renting a room in a private home, and I stayed out from about 10 o'clock one day till the next morning when the landlady come in there to straighten up the room, and she found me, and I was unconscious. But fours are remember too much about it, I don't, you know, just.
You were from, you did most of your work from East Texas, and were there quite a few Negroes around at the time, and what were your feelings towards these and the feelings of people that lived around this time?
Oh, they were quite a few. And I don't think there was too much racial bad feelings. I know I went in swimming with them, I fished with them, I hunted with them, I played ball with them, and there wasn't ever any problems. And I don't think the majority of the people, they got along all right, I think.
Did you ever have them over to your house or over to any, festival or celebration, that the Negroes were allowed to come?
No, I never did have no social dealings with them. When we'd went fishing or hunting or something, when we got in, he went to his house and I went to mine.
Did they go to the same churches?
No, they didn't go to the same churches.
Everybody had their own church.
Everybody had their own church, and I don't think they wanted to come to ours. We didn't go to theirs.
Okay. But, if you had a saloon or place, to eat or anything like that, were these Negro people allowed in that place with white people?
No, they wasn't allowed to eat in there.
They weren't. But there were still no bad feelings, but they just stayed in their own place and
That's right, and I think the problem that each individual, he couldn't go by his own conscience, he had to go by the community. Mm-hmm. But your own conscience, I think I wouldn't have mind sitting down at a table and eating with a colored fella, But then what you had to, I think people feared what the community, and the neighbors would say. But I think in each individual's heart, that as an individual, he didn't really believe in it.
Okay. Is there anything that you would like to change today? And have like you used to when you were younger back in the 30s and the 40s and 20s?
Oh, I don't know. They seemed like people was closer together then. They seemed like they needed one another more. And, you used to do a lot of this. And you, after supper, maybe you go over to neighbors and talk a while. You didn't have any television, you didn't have any radio. And you go over there and I know when I was a kid, we'd go over and they'd tell ghost stories. And I know one they used to tell about a man without a head riding up and down the road, And then I was a little kid, I'd kind of get skittish about going home.
But
They were some good storytellers back then.
Okay. But everybody helped each other, and they didn't. When somebody'd come over there and help you with your farm or something like that, or help you build your house, they didn't expect to get paid or anything, did they?
Oh, no money, no. If somebody had a cow in a bog hole or something, you just went and helped them get it out. There wasn't no thought of money. That was just your duty to do that.
Everybody just lived with each other, and they helped each other with all their problems and everything.
Oh, yeah, they helped each other with their problems. Anybody gets sick and was sick, there was somebody's neighbors would go and set up all night, and take care of them in their home.
Well, like say if a man got sick in the family and he was in bed for a long time, would the neighbors kind of help him with his chores and stuff?
The neighbors would take their teams and cultivators over there and keep his crop up. There was no thought of money.
Then you could say that during this time that it was very fortunate for a man and a family to have real good neighbors.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think so. I think good neighbors. I guess we've been the luckiest people in the world. We've never lived at a place that we didn't have good neighbors.
Oh, that's real good.